The border crisis is a humanitarian crisis of incredible magnitude. Sometimes the media paints it in such terms as these poor refugee children who are seeking asylum here in the U.S. And certainly that is one aspect of the story. But is that an accurate picture as the whole picture? Others describe this as virtually an invasion of our nation. What is a Christian response to this crisis? Right now, our guest on Vocal Point for this segment is William J. Federer, my good friend. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Bill, welcome back to the program. And I've got to start by asking you, what link is there between President Obama defying the DREAM Act, even though Congress didn't act it, or despite the fact Congress didn't act it, he said, hey, look, I've got a pen, I've got a phone, and by executive order, we'll go ahead and allow children to come here. Is there any link for, you know, between him doing that a year or two ago and all these people from Central America streaming in to the southern U.S.?
Well, it's interesting. One of the pictures that has surfaced online is that of a tennis shoe with President Obama's picture on it saying, yes, we can. Evidently, these are being passed out to the quote-unquote children coming across the border. We're seeing tens of thousands. They estimate over 100,000 have crossed. That's like 700 a day. This is an enormous figure.
Well, wait, Bill. When you say 100,000, you mean 100,000 since when, approximately?
Since this crisis has been going on, so probably less than a year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So the Secretary of Homeland Security, Jeb Johnson, told senators that over the past 3 weeks of apprehensions of illegal immigrants, they are down from 1,600 apprehensions a day to just 700 apprehensions a day. So these are the ones apprehended, which means that there's a lot more getting through, and this is per day. But the thing that really concerns me is what the former head of the former National Deputy Chief of U.S. Border Patrol, his name was Ronald Colburn. And Ronald Colburn told the National Review Online, all of the good that was done after 9/11 up to now has been reversed single-handedly. What this situation on the border is doing is growing the haystack, is adding clutter so that those dangerous needles can get through, because we're tied up capturing instead juvenile children from Guatemala and El Salvador.
Wow.
So what he's pointing out is that the president, through his signals that he has sent, has created a haystack on the border that needles are coming through. Now, what is he talking about, the needles? He's talking about gang members. He's talking about thousands of gang members and the worst kind, the MS-13 gang. These are gang members that are known for dismemberment, for killings, for beheadings. And these children, they're 17 years old, and they're covered with tattoos from head to foot. These are serious offenders that the president is busing to cities all across America. Now, there are 1,100 cities in America that have MS-13 gang chapters in them. But the thing that is of concern is that the fundamental Muslims have infiltrated the drug gangs. So now there are Hamas chapters and Hezbollah chapters in cities across America. And one of the things that is of concern is the OTMs, other than Mexicans, that are coming across the border. Yes, there are other Latin American countries, but yes, there are Pakistanis and Sudanese and Somalis and all kinds of Middle Eastern peoples coming across the border. They have found Korans, prayer rugs, Arabic Spanish dictionaries, Urdu, which is the language in Pakistan. English dictionaries scattered across the border. And so these are Muslim fundamentalists coming into the country, posing as Hispanics, and they are being bussed around the country.
Well, wait. Well, let's put this in perspective. When you say these are, and then you describe it that way, you're saying that a portion of those who are streaming in fit that category. Also, by the way, do you have any idea what kind of statistics you're talking about as far as this notorious gang member, as opposed to just, you know, poor innocent children who are seeking asylum, you know, seeking a better life?
Some of the statistics I've read, maybe 1 in 10, maybe 2 in 10.
What 1 in 10 being a gang member?
Correct.
And then as far as, let's say, any ties to, you know, radical Muslim groups, that would be a much smaller percentage, I would trust.
They have infested the gangs.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But the president, back in January, the Obama administration sought and advertised for a vendor to escort 65,000 unaccompanied children from the border to shelters throughout the country.
Wow.
So back in January, the president was planning this. And so this is a typical strategy that Saul Alinsky used, where you create the crises to push your agenda. And so this is a created crisis to push the agenda of what? Him wanting to do his comprehensive immigration policy, which, interestingly enough, is to continue to have the doors open. There's one issue is that 4 out of 5 immigrants that cross the southern border end up voting Democrat. And so by letting these in, especially to border states, especially Texas, that is a conservative state, you can tip the scales for an up-and-coming election. Now, this is not anything new. Lyndon Johnson began this. Lyndon Johnson changed the immigration quotas in 1964, he and Teddy Kennedy. Prior to 1964, the majority of immigrants into America came from Europe, came from three countries, Germany, England, and Ireland. They were similar in their...
And they assimilated.
They assimilated. They had a Judeo-Christian ethic. They had a work ethic. They ended up starting businesses and farms, and they ended up turning into business owners, turning into Republicans. And it was noted that immigrants from poorer countries tended to be more dependent on the government and tended to vote for the candidates that promised more handouts. And Lyndon Johnson created the Great Society Welfare State, the beginning of this huge government handout. And so this was a policy that was instituted to intentionally change the immigration quotas, you know.
And so now,
I think read through history knows, to increase the Democrat voter base.
And so now, jumping ahead 40 years later, it's the same basic policy, only now on steroids. I want to read something that I wrote about this recently and would like your comments, because we do know that there are some big money sources and even some professed Republicans and so forth that are saying, oh, yeah, you know, we should have comprehensive welfare, or I'm sorry, immigration reform. Listen to this. I wrote about this just last week. Our lawless president opens the borders. That was the column title. Central American families are being separated and uprooted. Diseases are running rampant. It's a humanitarian crisis. What is this current border meltdown all about? It seems to me, for the Democrats, it's all about more voters. It's all about their political base. As George Bernard Shaw once said, if you rob Peter to pay Paul, you can always count on Paul's vote. For the Republicans, the country club type, not the values voters, it's all about cheap labor. Some big corporations and mega wealthy businessmen clamor for the same thing. I saw a bill a couple weeks ago, you know, when the border crisis was hot in the news, that Zuckerberg or whatever, the guy from Facebook, was saying, you know, oh, America needs immigration reform. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Isn't this a guy that has essentially renounced his citizenship because he doesn't want to pay all the taxes, and now he's encouraging all these illegals to come into the country? I mean, what's going on here? It seems unfair.
Sexual identity categories.
Yeah, well, but, I mean, regardless of that, he's certainly very liberal. But regardless of that, again, there are people who, let's say Republicans, for example, who are in favor of open borders and so forth, and nobody's willing to say it. I mean, maybe Ann Coulter. Look, this is about cheap labor as far as they're concerned. So, you know, the middle class is the one that really loses here.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And this is, the big losers are the young kids just getting out of school with their huge college loans, and they're not able to get a job. And the reason they can't get these starter jobs is because of all the immigrants coming across, taking them and willing to work for a cheaper amount of money. And so, and then also it's those that are less educated, those that are on the bottom rung of the unemployment ladder, they're the ones that lose out. And so this is undercutting our country's work base. But again, the thing that really, really concerns me is Hugo Chavez for years has been bringing Muslim terrorists over from Iran to Venezuela, teaching them Spanish, sending them north. The drug gangs throughout Latin America have been taken over by Hezbollah chapters, Hamas chapters, the Muslim Brotherhood. That's why we're seeing more and more beheadings along the border. A few years ago, a gang leader was captured, and his nickname was El Taliban. And then we see Eric Holder supplying guns to the drug gangs. This is the Fast and Furious. He is held in contempt of Congress. He should have been arrested and put in jail. He's still acting as our attorney general. Eric Holder, his department, was supplying guns to the drug gangs because there was one particular drug gang that they were backing to help get rid of the rest. And so now there is a super drug gang that our government is working together with.
Wow.
And they are, helping to bring these illegal immigrants across the border. And so there's the Alinsky strategy I mentioned about affecting future voting and the demographics. But there is a more potentially nefarious purpose, and that is civil unrest, because we see that these immigrants are being brought to cities across America. The reports are that their information is not being handed over to the local law enforcement authorities. They're just being brought in and dumped. And so there's a good chance that we're going to see, as a matter of fact, there's reports of these MS-13 gangs, and then the Hezbollah chapters opening up and becoming more visible in cities and recruiting. And they target the young men, and they bring them in. So at a moment's notice, they could be told to commit their Arab Spring acts of violence, so to speak, and then there would be an excuse for the government to have martial law because of the civil unrest. Now, I hope I'm speaking out of turn. I hope this doesn't happen. But we have a president that was supplying guns to the terrorists in Libya to overthrow Gaddafi, a president who is was supporting the Muslim Brotherhood to take over Egypt. And right now, our government is supplying guns and arms and trainings to these ISIS people, initially to overthrow the leader in Syria, Assad. But since Russia came to Assad's rescue, these people have turned into Iraq. And so we spent lots of American lives and American sacrifice to free Iraq from the Taliban and from Saddam Hussein. And now we've had a change in our policy, and we are supporting those who are tearing down the churches. Mosul, the second biggest city in Iraq, just had an 1,800-year-old Christian church burnt and destroyed. The ISIS, the Islamic State of Syria and Iraq, 2 weeks ago put out a decree that everybody, all the Christians, have to convert to Islam, pay this enormous amount of money called a jizya, or die or flee. And when they flee, they can take nothing with them. No money, no clothes, just what's on their back. I mean, there were stories of girls leaving and the Muslim women seeing them with their earrings and ripping the earrings out. And Christians are being treated right now this way in Iraq. And we have to remember, it was just a few months ago that Obama decided to pull all of the American presence out of Iraq, and Obama let go five generals from Guantanamo Bay so that they could go back there and help orchestrate this. And people are beginning to connect the dots that there is an agenda being systematically implemented, and people are waking up and saying, this is more than business as usual. This could come across the southern border into cities across America, and this could escalate very quickly.
All right. Now, I started out this program, this segment, and we're talking, by the way, with Bill Federer, best-selling author and my good friend and a great speaker. But I started out by asking, what's a Christian response to this? And surely there's a humanitarian angle here, too. And by the way, some churches are stepping up to the plate and doing what they can to help. I mean, especially when you consider that in some cases, these are just people who are trying to seek a better life. And, you know, as I've heard one fellow put it, if you were in their shoes, you might risk the same thing, you know, on behalf of your family so that there might be some future.
That's a great Alinsky strategy. It is to take advantage of the generosity of the system to burden it down and collapse it.
Why do you laugh? It's terrible.
It's the Cloud Piven strategy.
Yeah. Hey, explain who those were. Explain who those people were from Columbia
Richard
University.
Cloward, Francis Piven were Columbia University professors, and they adopted the Alinsky strategy of creating crises. They said the best crisis is a financial crisis, and they, in New York City, changed the welfare. This is back in the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
Changed it from being considered a thing of shame to be on welfare to an entitlement. And so they and their organizers would go out across New York and sign as many people up for welfare as possible, so much so that it bankrupted the city of New York. Rudy Giuliani mentioned the Cloward Piven couple by name,
yes,
as being responsible for bankrupting the city's welfare, so the city had to appeal to the state for bailout. And then so this worked, and so this is this process where you want to get as many people dependent on the system to collapse the system. It's a Cloward Piven strategy, and in a real simple sense, it's this: the more people you can get out of work and get to receive money from the government, they will always be motivated to continue to get that free money, and they'll always vote and support those who want to continue that. And to make this come home, imagine if you were getting a $1,000 check in the mail every week from someone you didn't know, week after week after week, year after year. Would you wake up one day and ask yourself, who is sending me this $1,000 check? I'm going to find out who they are and vote them out of office.
Huh.
Would anybody do that?
No.
And so once they get people to receive free money from the government, the natural human tendency is to continue that. So there is a motivation, a political motivation, to get as many people out of work and as many people receiving money from the government, they become permanent Democrat voters. I hate to say it, but you just can do a little homework and verify this.
Yeah.
But so we see that it's taking advantage of the Christian generosity.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, sort of parasitical.
Yeah.
The parasite lives off the host victim. And
not sort of. It directly is. But the Bible does say, if a man will not work, neither shall he eat. The Bible also says, thou shalt not steal. And as Cal Beisner points out, who wrote the little booklet called Social Justice, explaining that from a true biblical perspective, he says, thou shalt not steal doesn't have an exemption saying, you know, unless thou art the government. And that's true. And also in the commandments, it says, thou shalt not covet. Well, socialism, of which this is kind of a new manifestation, socialism is certainly based on the problem of coveting. It taps into coveting.
Oh, it does. It's a base human desire. Selfishness is the most base common desire. Ever since the fall in the garden, you have selfishness in the human DNA. And our founders understood that. That's why they pitted the selfishness in one branch against the selfishness in the other.
Yeah.
They said, there's no angels amongst us.
And that's why we've enjoyed so much freedom. Is that freedom at risk in the future?
Unfortunately,
in America?
It is. And what I've observed in history is water goes down the drain slowly around the edges, but as it gets closer and closer to the middle, it goes faster and faster until it's sucked down the vortex. In other words, water seeping through a dam comes slowly, but then it begins to knock away more and more of the dirt until finally the whole thing collapses very quickly.
Yeah.
Another illustration, I sometimes, it's been a couple of years, but I would enjoy watching the Mythbusters, the TV guys that would, like, blow up things. And you're familiar with that show, maybe. Well, anyway, they had one car that they had with 1,000 pieces of duct tape, and they lifted it up on a crane. Tried to see, is duct tape strong enough to hold up a car? And it did. And then one of the pieces of duct tape began to fray a little bit, just a little bit, slowly, then it frayed a little more, and then all of a sudden, pop, it snapped. And then a couple next to it, they frayed quicker and pop. Then the next one, pop. And then pretty soon, the whole thing, bam, fell to the ground.
Mm.
And so power concentrates into the hands of the government, just real slow. And then a little bit faster, and then a little bit faster, mm-hmm. until finally the whole thing happens very quickly. And the concern is right now is that the president is concentrating power, consolidating power so quickly, bypassing Congress. And, you know, you think of all of the executive orders that have been signed, that in the case of a national emergency, the president can assume control over the media, the finances, the transportation, the highways, the communications. Literally everything in the country can be controlled. Moving populations, everything can be controlled if there is a significant enough national emergency. Now, I pray that never happens, but those somebody must have thought ahead, because they are in the executive orders that exist. And just watching this president and his desire, so much so, to get around limitations that are on Congress, I pray that he's not tempted in that direction as well.
Well, you say limitations around Congress, you mean limitations around the president, right?
Right, the limitations that the Constitution places on the president, the limitations that Congress places on the president. You know, here we just had a couple days ago the president signing an executive order to force all businesses to hire homosexual, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And it's like, wait a second, don't we have a Congress? Don't we have congressmen that we can, that like vote on bills that do these things? And then it goes to the Senate and back and forth. And but yet the president, by his own executive order, is going to, we're no longer government of the people, by the people, and for the people, if that's
wow.
the case.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, I want to highlight this. The Obama administration, a year or two ago, reached an agreement with the Mexican government to run radio ads promoting American food stamps. So this is kind of a way in which the president has sent repeated signals to illegal immigrants that we have all kinds of free stuff available here. Now, on the one hand, it'd be nice to say, well, America has open borders and we welcome people with open arms. And on the other hand, if you have the open borders, is it fair to also have, you know, this unlimited welfare? Really, at the bottom line is then that means that the people who are working have to work, that much more harder. In fact, I said in that same column I referred to, if you've got two jobs just to make ends meet, you know, with this crisis going on at this rate, you know, pretty soon you're going to have to get three jobs to make ends meet in order to pay for all the, you know, all the people receiving the freebies from the government.
Well, the last statistic I read on the subject is that the second or third biggest source of money for Mexico is money sent back to Mexicans from people in the United States. So you have somebody comes up from a town or in Mexico, they come to America, they earn money in America, they live off a little bit, and they send a lot of it back home. Right? It's a normal tendency, but it turns into the billions and billions of dollars that is being sent back. And you ask yourself, how long can a country that is the most in-debt country in world history, called the United States of America, and we're printing dollar bills so fast that BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa have decided that they don't want to trade with the U.S. dollar. They're going to come up with their own form of exchange, which means there's going to be lots of dollars in the world that nobody wants and needs. How can a country that is in debt as America continue to have money sent out of America to these other countries? We're not investing, we're not improving, we're not helping our own selves. There comes a time when the patient on the emergency room table that's on life support and the doctor comes in as a Frankenstein wanting to drain more blood out. It's like
drain more what?
Drain more of the blood out. You know, how George Washington died, they kept bleeding him, you know, things. And so we need to have an awakening very quickly. Now, I believe everything natural has a spiritual reflection, so to speak, and so we're spiritually in debt. We are spiritually the most in debt, exporting, you know, our pornography, abortion, and our homosexual agenda all across the world, you know, and here we are with all the immorality in America. So we're spiritually in debt. It's being reflected in a physical debt, and we're seeing this onslaught. I wrote books on civilization. One is called Change to Chains, and it's the 6,000-year quest for global control. There's the fall of the Roman Empire, and it's being invaded by illegal immigrants. They were the Ostrogoths, Visigoths, Anglo-Saxons, Jews, Lombards.
No, wait. Okay, there is a difference there. Those guys came with, you know, armed with clubs and swords.
Not at first.
Oh.
The Chinese built the Great Wall of China. And the Huns and Mongols could no longer invade as easily into China. And so it turned into a redirection west. And so that's when you had the Huns attacking and a tribe would pick up and move further west. And that would attack, another tribe would pick up and move further west. And it starts this domino effect across Central Asia. And they began to spill across the border. And at first they came slow and they would come across and work as servants. And they would assimilate and learn the Latin language and even get involved in the military and business. And then it got to the place where a lot of the leaders in the military were Visigoths. They weren't even Romans. And then they were like, why are we keeping out other Visigoths when I'm Visigoth? Right? And then one winter, the Rhine freezes. A bunch of the Visigoths come across, and no Roman armies come to chase them out. And then more come across and more. And meanwhile, you have an emperor who's doing all of his gladiator entertainment, you know, and then you have, this indulgent. But even Julius Caesar noticed that as Rome got wealthier, the women waited longer to marry and waited and had fewer kids once they got married. And he noticed that the immigrants coming over had more kids and started sooner having more kids. And so he said he forbade women from wearing certain stylish clothes and riding in certain stylish carriages unless they had children, because he realized that demographically the Latin Romans were going to be outnumbered. Now, it didn't help any, and they were outnumbered. And Will and Ariel Durant said if the Romans would have let the immigrants come in slower, and process them through their school system, they could have turned into Latin and brought a whole new wave of genetic creativity into the Roman Empire and helped this empire to continue to flourish.
Wow! And instead, they had the wave of those Mongols and so forth. You know, just basically, it was bloodshed and so forth, and it was disaster.
Toward the end, it collapsed. I do liken it to eating. How much food do you eat in a year? Imagine if you had to eat that in one day. And so you only eat the food as fast as your body can assimilate it.
Right, right.
So how fast do you bring in the immigrants? Only as fast as you can assimilate them into the workforce, into the school system, into training them up. Once you bring them in too fast, it overloads the system and it collapses, which, I mean, you had Bill Ayers and all those people, you know, back in the 70s talking about collapsing the system and so forth.
It's funny you mention him. Obama launched his political campaign way back when in the 1990s, he launched his political campaign in Bill Ayers' living room. Bill, we have less than half a minute to go. AmericanMinute.com for more information. What would you like to say in closing about the border crisis?
Well, my book, Change to Chains, it's the 6,000-year quest for global control, gives an interesting view of how great empires have collapsed through a uncontrolled immigration strategy. It's likened to weather systems, high pressure, low pressure, and one rushes to the other to equalize. And so you have this rush to equalize, and we're trying to hold it off, but because if it happens, the equalization is going to be our standard of living dropping. AmericanMinute.com is my website. It is a time. Proverbs says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. What kind of inheritance are we leaving to our children's children?
Wow. Bill Federer, God bless you. Always a pleasure. Thank you now.
Thanks, Jerry.
Sure.